No risk it, no biscuit.
Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to the show for you, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Welcome again, Arizona Cardinals fans, to the Rise Up, See Red podcast. We're talking offseason. This is your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, part of the USA Today NFL Wire. And my co-host is Seth Cox. He's from SB Nation's RevengeOfTheBirds.com, their team site there, and also one of the hosts of the NFL Draft Breakdown podcast. And we're in the middle of the postseason without the Cardinals there. Last show, if you listened to the last show, we talked about, you know, kind of the lamenting the missing the Cardinals in the wild card round. And I think before I actually speak for Seth, I can say that probably at this point, yeah, the Cardinals definitely didn't deserve to be at this point. Would you not say that the Cardinals would not have made it this far in the playoffs based on what we saw from the Cowboys and the Packers?
Yeah, and I think I'm better with it now because the Seahawks are out and the Texans are out. Again, not that the Cardinals could replace the Texans, but just in general, at least the four teams remaining I know are better than the Cardinals in this 2016 edition of the season.
And so what we've got today, tonight, in our one of our off-season shows, we're going to be talking about the NFL playoffs, well, sans Cardinals, so... Well, we will be, you know, since the Seahawks are now out, we can be somewhat unbiased bystanders and observers for the playoffs, and then we're gonna talk about, you know, some of the Cardinals stuff. We're gonna look at the list of the Cardinals free agents to be, and we're gonna give our takes as to whom the Cardinals should bring back, and then who should they let go, this that sort of thing. But you know, Seth, how is everything back east? You know, I'm still here in the 60 plus degree warm weather of winter of Arizona, and you're getting nice and cold still. So, but how is everything out there?
Oh, you know, it's cold. It's finally above freezing, so it's been in the it's been in the mid 30s and rainy the last 2 days after getting finally out of freezing temps. So
good,
you know,
stuff.
It's finally we saw sun for the first time since we moved here on Saturday and Sunday, so there was that.
That's great news. Great news, of course. And the Cardinals, in fact, have a little bit of news as well. They made one roster. Actually, they took care of one of their free agents, Josh Morrow, signed to a two-year contract. He was set to become a restricted free agent, so they avoid tendering him. Terms of the contract aren't yet known. You have to figure that the compensation is going to be probably a little less than what that low round tender would have been, which they traded him for, I think, the second year on the deal. On a more personal level, you know, not Cardinals rostery type things, David Johnson is now a daddy. He and his wife welcomed into the world their new baby boy, a DJ Jr., and he was born a couple of weeks early on Saturday, and you probably saw, if you followed our sites, Revenge of the Birds or Cards Wire, you probably noticed the articles about them. There's all sorts of stuff. Of course, if you haven't yet, you definitely need to become, you know, listen to our show, because we love that you listen to the show, of course. But make sure that you are following SethsRevengeOfTheBirds.com and MyCardsWire.com, because in the off season of really not much, we continue to provide all sorts of Cardinals coverage. So let's go ahead and get started. But before we do, I'd like to let you know about Blue Apron. one of the partners of this fine show, Blue Apron, which is the number one fresh service, fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country, making it easier for families to prepare quality meals at their home with incredibly fresh, tasty ingredients. And in fact, I told you last week that I was waiting for my first shipment. So I was waiting for my first order, and we got it and we got it delivered last Friday. We've already had the salmon and rice. It was delicious. Next up, we're going to make it tomorrow night at the Chipotle stuffed enchiladas with, you know, rice and mushrooms, some types of recipes I normally wouldn't make myself. You know, if you are making food for your family, and I know families like Seth's and mine, we're always looking for ways to eat better and to have more delicious food and not to spend way too much money going out to eat or working really hard to find odd ingredients here and there to make the high-end type things. But we still want to keep a variety of delicious and quality home-cooked food. And that's what Blue Apron offers. You can, you know, its impact on the community, impact on households. But the great thing is that these meals, which come perfectly portioned, are less than $10 a meal. And you have a choice of menu, different menus you can do, you can look at. You can let the chefs have it sent the recipes out to you, or you can pick out your own. But for you, the listeners of Rise Up Sea Red, you can hit up blueapron.com/red, and you can test it out. You'll love how good it feels and tastes. You'll be creating incredibly home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. And the recipes, everything is absolutely as you need. The perfect amount of ingredients with no waste, the portions, the ingredients, and it's delicious. And it doesn't take that long. And so you'll know exactly what to do with step-by-step instructions. And you can even customize your recipes each week for based on your preferences. So you can do it how it fits your needs. So, but what you want to do is you go to, like I said, blueapron.com/red, and you can get your first three meals free with free shipping. Again, that's blueapron.com/red. That's Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And we'll go ahead and get started. We're going to talk about NFL playoffs. We have the divisional round is wrapped up, and Cardinals fans can smile a little bit because the Seattle Seahawks were who we thought they were, at least in terms of going up against the Atlanta Falcons. How great was it to see Atlanta just do everything all over the Seahawks, much like the Falcons did to the Cardinals when they traveled to Atlanta?
Yeah, and that was what we talked about last week. Just the reality that this isn't a very good Seattle defense right now. And does Earl Thomas make that much of a difference? I guess. We'll have to wait and see next year, see how he comes back and everything like that. It was one of those things that I think both you and I believe this is what was going to happen. We weren't going to come out and say, oh, the Seahawks are going to get blasted, because we've seen enough Seattle games to understand that, you know, they can do a lot of different things and seemingly pull rabbits out of their hat. But this team just felt different this year. They were 3-2-1 in the division. You know, were they the best team in their division? Record-wise against the rest of the NFL, yes. Against their own division, no. But, and I mean, they almost lost to the San Francisco 49ers the last week of the season. It was one of those games where we knew what the outcome could be, and I think we just were nervous in the idea of that coming true, because we have seen, like I said, Seattle overcome so many times.
And you know, which was good to see. At least it made for an interesting NFC side of things, because you got the absolute fun football watch. If you're not rooting for or against the Packers or the Cowboys, you get to see another team in Atlanta, a team that probably – that there's at least some people just simply hoping they do well because they're not the same powers, and they just look really good. We'll talk about the matchup a little bit against the Packers, but that offense is going to be really hard to stop because they have, and it's not just the prolific passing game. It's because they've got that plus a probably the best tandem of running backs in the game, which makes them dangerous. And defensively, they're not really anything good, but the one thing that they can do, what they have the threat of doing, is getting to the passer, and which will make for an interesting game this next weekend.
It will, and we're entering a point where I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that would disagree with the take that the Atlanta Falcons are the better team, but I don't know many people that are betting or, you know, putting their pick with the Atlanta Falcons, and that's just simply because how great Aaron Rodgers is right now.
It's going to be first team to 50, I think, that game.
Yeah, and again, and it might be the team that has the ball last, right? Like, that's who's going to win this game. I don't think anybody wants to bet against Aaron Rodgers the way he is playing right now.
Speaking of which, that game in Dallas, you know, it wasn't a pretty game to start, and it wasn't a great game to start because Green Bay jumped out to that lead. But the finish. The fact that you have this Dallas team who a young team that easily could have just folded, but they didn't. They battled back in part because Green Bay's defense isn't that good. They battled back, tied the game, getting big plays from their big players. Dak getting the Dak Prescott getting the two-pointer. Then Green Bay goes down. They kick the leading goal. It looked like it could have been the field goal to win it. Then Dak Prescott leads them down the field again. Dan Bailey ties it. And then Aaron Rodgers doing his magic again. Jared Cook, who Cardinals fans will know quite well, and the Rams fan, any Rams fans will recognize, super, super talent, super, super bad at dropping passes, especially on third down. Aaron Rodgers does his magic thing. I think he's got to deal with the devil, or maybe he's just the devil himself. The fact that I do not know how he does what he does, but he did it again, and they get the game-winning field goal. And on a kick that looked like, oh, boy, he's going to miss it, and then it wobbles back the other way and goes through. So it was, you know, I grew up a Cardinals fan and hated the Cowboys in the 90s. I will say perhaps maybe my fandom is a little less. I've stopped hating the Cowboys in part because I've had a really good, healthy respect for Tony Romo and really like him as a player. Since Dak Prescott took, they are an easy team to root for in terms of the NFL if you just don't hate the Cowboys because they've got that young core of Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott. And, you know, I would have liked to see them win. But I can't complain about that. And they both deserve to win. Neither deserved to lose, ultimately. It just happened to be, as we've seen before, Aaron Rodgers with the ball last is a wizard.
And it's unfair, right? Like, I tweeted it out the other day, but since 92, the Packers have had Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers as their starting quarterbacks. If a Packers fan, if the Packers lose in heartbreaking fashion in the next two games, just remember, don't feel bad for them because they've only had to deal with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers as their quarterbacks for a quarter century. Meanwhile,
the Cardinals have got one title. That's it.
And meanwhile,
downtrodden.
The Cardinals can't even go a decade with one starting quarterback. So. The Cardinals can't even go a decade with three starting quarterbacks.
No, we can't. You know, Carson Palmer's going to be entering year, what is it, five?
Yeah.
And that's really, they haven't had a guy start that long as the starting guy. Because Kurt Warner was really only the starter in his 5 years that he was here. really he started. He was a starter on and off early on. He was the starter the last half of 2007, and then it was basically 3 out of the 5 years he was here. He was a starter. You had Jake Plummer, who you had for I think 5 or 6 seasons. So really, you haven't had a guy since Jake Plummer to be able to be starting for any longer than like 4 seasons. And Carson's entering year 5, and he was washed up when we got him, apparently. But, you know, good job, Cardinals.
Exactly. But, I mean, so you look at it, I mean, outside of the Patriots, has any team really had it better? No. So, you know, you can't break my heart, Packers fans. So if you lose, you lose. Sorry. But I think this game's highly intriguing. I think it's going to be fun. Like you said, I think it's going to be a shootout. But, you know, we said that about the Cardinals and Packers last year, and then it wasn't.
And that was gross until the end when it was magical again.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I just think it's going to be it's going to be, you know, an interesting watch. So.
Well, in both teams, their defenses just aren't. And here, looking ahead, that's why I don't think either one of these teams can actually win the Super Bowl, because as prolific as their offenses are and as good as their quarterbacks are, I think their defensive, especially with the two teams left in the AFC, is that their defensive flaws, I mean, their shortcomings on defense are going to be too much to overcome playing a team like New England or Pittsburgh, and they won't be able to stop here's this. We've all heard about how defense wins championships. This has been an adage forever. These are 4 teams that are left that are all built around offense. Now, they're not all bad defensively, but all 4 of these teams are in the top 10 in both points scored and yards per game. But you've got the Falcons and the Green and the Packers were both, but they're below 20 in defensive rankings. But you've got a Patriots team that's number 1 in scoring defense and a Pittsburgh Steelers team that I think is number 10, if I remember the ranking right, in scoring defense. Very balanced teams, but both teams are based on offense. All 4 that are left are offensive teams, which is something we haven't seen. You know, we got from the Seahawks team from a couple years ago, and you had the Broncos from last year that were built on their defenses and made plays offensively. And Seattle's offense, in fairness, was an understated good because they could pile up points. But, you know, it goes to show that you don't have to have a great defense to get to or be in the hunt for a championship. And we'll see how this plays out, but you know, this is an offensive league. Unless you have an elite defense, you need a great offense with at least an okay defense.
Yeah, and I think the team that I think you have to be most impressed with right now is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Their defense is turning it on at the right time, but like Aaron Rodgers, I don't think anybody wants to bet against Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. So,
and I never, literally, never do if they're at home. Never.
So ever. I think the smart money is probably on the Patriots and Packers, right?
You'd think so. Just simply, you know, I with my weekly against the spread picks, I never pick against Brady at home ever. I think that might have failed me maybe twice in 4 years, it seems. Yeah, I haven't kept track perfectly. And the Packers are just playing unbelievable football. I think, and this is where I'm like, but Atlanta, I think I like their – but that's the thing. If you give Aaron Rodgers the ball at the end, then something bad's going to happen for Atlanta. That's what's going to happen. And if you look at those AFC games over the weekend – They were kind of exactly as advertised. New England running away with the win, even though they didn't look particularly good, but they were playing a really good Houston defense. And then you got the Steelers and the Chiefs. The Chiefs doing just enough defensively and being bored. They were exactly the Chiefs, and they did just enough to stay in the game, and they had a chance to tie it. And I don't care what Travis Kelce said. You know, that wasn't as much as you'd like to see players, see refs, let them play the game, that was a holding call. We've seen that before. Bruce Arians would have been gone and going out of his mind if it hadn't been called. And he were on defense because that, you know, James Harrison beat Fisher to the edge. He hooked him, he grabbed him, and he went to the ground. That's going to get called almost every time. That's, you know, that's and obvious right there on the edge. Right.
I understand.
But we didn't really want the Chiefs in the championship game, did we?
Oh, no. I mean, I thought they had the best defense left outside of Houston, but Houston's offense is such a tire fire. So, I think we got the four best teams, honestly.
But geez,
you can make a case for Dallas. You know, but I think we got probably the four best quarterbacks. So it goes back to what we talk about all the time. You either have to have a quarterback that elevates the talent around him, or you have to have enough talent around the quarterback to elevate his mistakes. When you look at the Cardinals, this isn't a shot at Carson Palmer because there's maybe only three or four elevators in the NFL.
They happen to all be playing this weekend.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even say Ben Roethlisberger is an elevator anymore. I think he's elevated by Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, he has a fantastic offensive line. I think he's elevated. The Steelers have done what I have thought the Cardinals needed to do, you know, for Carson Palmer, in that they, you know, quote unquote Palmer proof everything and kind of get all these players in here that can help Carson Palmer. Ben Roethlisberger didn't play well against the Chiefs. I mean, he didn't even really play well in the first round when they beat the Dolphins. So, it's one of those things that if you don't have Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady is Matt Ryan, like, look how much talent Matt Ryan has around him, so I don't know. Outside of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, Matt Ryan, you could maybe argue as an elevator, but you look at the talent around him and what he's done in years previous, I don't know. So that's just, you know, that's my continued take on the Cardinals can absolutely win if Carson Palmer's their quarterback. They just can't win because of him. And you're seeing what that looks like in the form of the Pittsburgh Steelers right now. You know, I wouldn't say that Ben Roethlisberger is the reason they are winning these games.
And for me, my picks, maybe it's just I'm going to lean towards, you know, how they talk the chalk. I'm going to lean towards New England in the AFC. And I think I am rooting for Atlanta, but I think they have enough offensively that will keep Green Bay from doing what they've done this entire postseason. So I'm picking a New England Atlanta Super Bowl. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'll go the opposite. I'll take Pittsburgh and Green Bay. For whatever reason, this Pittsburgh team and that offense, I don't know. They just look so good. Man, do the Cardinals miss Todd Haley, the offensive coordinator. He's just such a – I mean, but that's not even a shot at Arians. You look at what Haley has done, and he has a ton of talent, don't get me wrong, but we've seen what he's able to do with a ton of talent. Look at how good that Cardinals offense was. Even those Chiefs offense when he was the coach there, and he won a bunch of games. He just was a
playoff team with Matt Cassel.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that's enough of the playoffs. We're going to have come up next on Rise of Sea Red on what will end up ultimately being the final segment of the show. Is we're going to talk about the Arizona Cardinals free agents. We're going to go down to the list of their unrestricted and restricted free agents. We're going to tell you who we think the Cardinals should keep and whom they should let go. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're actually talking Cardinals now. Off-season talk. We're now at the point we're going to start looking at free agents. This is a little bit earlier in the off-season when we normally do this, but we're going to just focus on right now just the players that are set to become unrestricted and restricted free agents. Now, they have currently two restricted free agents that they have control of if they choose to do so. They had three. Josh Morrow was taken off the table as he was re-signed by the Cardinals on a two-year deal, which is a very underrated signing. I think it's a very important one, not because he's flashy, but because he works perfectly in terms of versatility and discipline. He's always making plays around the line of scrimmage and behind the line of scrimmage, and he provides some versatility. And what you probably didn't pay attention to, while he doesn't play in base sets, he started 13 games. He is or was their starting, one of their starting down linemen, or if you want to call him, they went with on their base nickel, which was their starting lineup. They went with Corey Peters, Calais Campbell, and Josh Morrow as their defensive tackles or defensive linemen, and with Chandler Jones as their one outside linebacker. And so Morrow plays somewhere between a DT and it lines up where he's kind of an outside linebacker. So that's a really smart signing. It's not a great signing, but it's a smart signing for what they like to do defensively.
It is, and it's one of those things, like you said, it's – I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be more than, like, $3 million, can you? I mean, maybe four.
No. It's kind of like – that's the thing I don't think.
It's probably going to be, like, two and a half, wouldn't you think?
I probably, because it's going to be, I would imagine it's going to be less than the tender, which is what, about 1.7 million.
So maybe like one and a half a year. So yeah, probably between 2 and 3 million total. So and
That's solid. And the Cardinals have two other restricted free agents. They have tight end Darren Fells and kicker Chandler Catanzaro. So with these two guys, first off, are either of them worth a tender?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. No, I don't think so. Like, here's the thing. You have to have guys at the bottom of your roster. So when you talk about tendering these restricted free agents, you know, you have to have those guys at the bottom. But you can also get them in the undrafted portion of the draft. But the other thing is they've got time in the system, right? So they've already invested some time. I mean, you probably offer them like minimum contracts because they're not vets yet. So you don't have to offer them veteran minimum. So you offer them, you know, a $400,000, $500,000, $600,000. Guys like this are so difficult because, like I said, they're replaceable parts, but when they already know the system and, you know, it comes down to you have to fill out the bottom of your roster. How cheap can you get them? That sounds bad, but it's true.
Well, yeah. Fells, I don't think he's a guy you need to tender. I don't think he played well enough to garner any interest anywhere, so I don't think there's any danger of him, you know, getting stolen anywhere unless he just wants to go. And I don't even know, depending on what happens, obviously Jermaine Gresham is kind of a priority. That's what the reports are. And while Farrells is a nice player to have, I wouldn't tender him. Now, I mean,
he was $600,000 last year. So
I bet you can re-sign for 800.
Yeah,
and that's just for the 1 year deal.
Do you want to raise it? Yeah, probably. I think with Catanzaro, I wrote about it for tomorrow. Like, here's the thing. He struggled this year, right? But we heard on the NFL on Fox, you know, podcast, or not the podcast, but the game cast, that the Packers, you know, in 2000, I think it was 12, they stuck by Mason Crosby in his down year. So I was like, okay, what does that mean? So I went back and looked. So for reference, Catanzaro made 87.6 or 87.9 of his field goals in 2014, his rookie season, and 100% of his extra points. Now, I think that was before the change, right?
Yeah.
15 was the change. So then in 15, he made 90.4% of his field goals. And he dropped down to like just under 91% for extra points. So, I mean, that's a slight concern.
And
in his down season this year, he was at 75%. Cosby's down year was like 66%. So, and Cosby's had two or three seasons under 75%. So, I don't know. Like, and this is what you get for going off of narratives instead of like actually looking at the numbers. I think you and I both assumed that, you know, this was a bad season for Catanzaro. And in relative to what he's done, it was. But relative to other, you know, top level kickers, bad seasons, it really wasn't. So
he missed long kicks, and he's been inconsistent beyond 50, even though he's got the leg. Basically, his season came down to
extra points,
two kicks and extra points. But even you look at some of the, you look at the, especially the extra point numbers are throughout football, they're not good this year. No. It's kind of in the, so it really came down to two kicks. It came down to the week one kick. And it came down to the clanger in overtime.
Well, and so here's the kicker. Yeah, here's the kicker of this whole thing.
Except with the puns.
He's terrible. No, terrible is a bad word. But terrible relative to his success, he's terrible at University of Phoenix. He's an 80% at University of Phoenix on field goals, and he's 90% on the road. So you can't even blame it on kicking away from UFP. He's worse at home, significantly at home. Like that, like if you wanted to use that and the extra point thing as a reason to get rid of him, I would do it. But I think he's shown that he is, you know, a potential special kicker, especially that run in 15. So I don't know. One quick thing on Darren Fells. I didn't know this. You may have known this. Did you know he's 30?
Yeah, he's old. So I didn't realize he was 30, but he was older to begin with because he spent time playing professional basketball. So he didn't come up through the ranks, you know, as a 22-year-old.
So
he was already.
I think that changes my answer to no. I wouldn't even give him 800,000 because he's 30. So like, there's no breakout left. You get what I'm saying? Like,
right.
Even,
yeah, but 800,000, that's a couple of hundred thousand more than what you're paying.
But does
Hakeem
that mean,
Vallis.
But that's my point. You can have Hakeem Vallis and Ifeanyi Moma, and you're not going to cut Troy Nicholas because he is on, like, it's not a big enough cap savings to cut him. Like, if you bring back Fells, you have to cut Nicholas, don't you? Because then it's at least a wash.
Probably. That's true. But at least Fells can play.
Stay healthy. Yeah. Exactly. At least he's suited up 16 games a year as opposed to Nicholas is looking good off the bus for four games and then at home.
Catanzaro, I tender him. And there's one reason. I'm not going to sign him to a long-term deal. I give him the lowest tender, which is $1.7 million. But the thing you can do with that is that you can still cut him with no problem, and there's no damage. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
I tender him low. I bring him in. And then I bring in another kicker, whether it's a guy you draft, whether it's like a legitimate kicking prospect, a veteran, and you have him battle it out. And, you know, that way you give Catman another year to get it right. And if he does, then good for him. He can cash in a little bit. And you know, maybe he becomes, as we've seen it before, maybe he becomes their franchise tag in a year. But I don't see the damage in giving him a tender, because that way he's round. I'm sure they probably would like him at a lower number, but 1.7 for 1 year on a kicker isn't the worst thing you're going to pay. And they're already going bargain basement for their punters between Matt Weil and Richie Leone. And so, you know, a few extra $100,000 there, you would sign him if you signed him, it'd be for $1 million, 1.7. You keep him around for a year, and if he doesn't look good in camp or you like a kicker better, you toss him to the curb and there's no damage to the cap.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Now we've got a list of unrestricted free agents. Let me just go down the list, and then we'll talk by the positions. We'll start on the offensive side. You've got at running back Andre Ellington, Chris Johnson, Stephon Taylor. Among receivers, there's only one, it's Jeremy Ross, whom they picked up in the last couple of weeks. Jermaine Gresham at tight end. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4 on the offensive line. Really only three. One is listed as Evan Mathis. He's not going to play again. Taylor Boggs, unrestricted. A.Q. Shipley, unrestricted. Earl Watford, unrestricted. On the defensive line, you've got Calais Campbell and Frosty Rucker. In the linebacking core, you've got Chandler Jones, Kevin Minter, C.O. Moore, and Alex Okafor. And then in the defensive backfield, you've got Marcus Cooper, Tony Jefferson, Mike Jenkins, the guy, if you might remember, was signed in training camp, broke his arm, and ended up on the injured reserve after he tore his ACL. So, oh, geez. And then DJ Swearinger. So those are the guys they have listed as unrestricted free agents, which potentially they have a potential to have a neat little haul in terms of cop picks next year. But let's talk about the running backs. Andre Ellington, worth bringing back or not? Do you try to re-sign him or no?
No. There's not even anything to it because I don't know, like, what he gives you. I think this year showed that he doesn't have the value that we expected him to have.
At running back, definitely not. I'd consider bringing him back as a receiver. I'd consider it to play receiver full-time. That's basically what he was doing towards the end of the season. Although, he just, movement-wise, he didn't look good. But I would consider bringing him back in the mix at receiver only.
Right.
Chris Johnson.
I'm done with him. I bring Johnson back. I bring Johnson
Chris
back.
Chris Johnson?
Because you're going to get him for the same price, right? You're still going to get him for $1.5 million. So you get a veteran that you know can carry the rock. Kerwin Williams isn't on this list, right?
He's under control for next year.
So you get a veteran that you know can carry the rock if he's healthy. You don't have to play him as anything more than your two back if he beats out Kerwin Williams and Elijah Penny or another undrafted free agent running back or another veteran running back. But I think the fact that he's been in the system, he means a lot to the locker room and he means a lot to David Johnson. I think all of that matters in bringing him back at least one more time. And it's same type of thing. Like you sign him, you don't guarantee any money. If he plays, he gets his, you know, after what, September 1, if he plays or if he's on the roster, he gets all $1.5 million. If people beat him out, it's an easy cut and move on. I like the idea of him as the veteran presence there.
And based on the guys that are out there, they're not going to find anyone more talented necessarily. Stephon Taylor, special teams guy, but
look,
sayonara. You can go, you know, you probably, maybe, perhaps have Stephon Taylor replacement and Elijah Penny. maybe he's not going to be quite the pass blocker. But if you have Chris Johnson, and he's good in pass protection. So, you know, Stephon Taylor has had a great role here, and it'll be interesting to see if he actually gets a job somewhere after this season. Solid on special teams, but limited value as a back.
Right, and they're at a point where they need more in terms of production from the back end as opposed to just bodies. Like they gotta start shaking some things up, especially since, like you said, he's a quote unquote key special teams contributor who on a very bad unit. So if you're gonna, you know, if you're going to point to his special teams abilities, then where were they this year? And I know it probably wasn't a lot of Stephon Taylor's fault, but still.
No. But yeah, you talk about some of these core special teamers. You talk about Justin Beth. You talk about Stephon Taylor, and you're like, but wait, the unit was bad. So, but you need those leaders in that room. And receiver, you've got Jeremy Ross. He's not going to cost anything. Why not?
The same argument I had with, you know, the restricted free agents is the same thing I have with Ross. Like, he's been in the system. He knows the system. Even if they were to, draft a receiver, that receiver's not going to play right in front of, or that Ross isn't going to play in front of that receiver. So I don't know. Like I'm fine. Like you said, I'm fine with bringing him back. It's going to be cheap. It won't matter in the end.
At tight end, you've got Jermaine Gresham. He's already reportedly one of their three main priorities outside of Chandler Jones. And that's a smart move. That's a smart move because based on what you want from your tight ends, he knows the system. You could replace him with a guy that's going to cost, you know, roughly the same amount, maybe be a little bit less. I mean, you brought up the name Luke Wilson is intriguing, but Gresham gives you something that one, he's got a comfort level with Carson Palmer. He's ferocious in the run game and he likes blocking, which is really good for the Cardinals tight ends and really good for their offense. And he emerged at the end of last year as one of their legitimate targets.
The question becomes, how much do you have to pay him? So tight ends on the market right now aren't going for much. That's the first thing. You know you're going to have about $40 million in cap space, which seems like a lot of money, but in the scheme of things, it's really going to go really fast.
Yes. Especially if they have to franchise him, because then you're talking about
17 million, right? Is it 15 or 17 million?
I think it's just under 15, but yeah. It's all cap. So there's no signing bonus. Yeah,
there's no spreading it out.
Fluff. It's just all of that number against the cap.
So I'm trying to update this, but I can't get it to update. So Jimmy Graham's at 9 million. These are cap hits. So, I mean, take them for what they are. They're not, you know, they're not pure salary.
What Gresham had, was it 3.5 this year?
So
he turned down, what was it, about 6 million?
I think you're going to have to go around that 6 million.
I think so.
You might be able to do like 3.15 and guarantee more. But you're going to have to pony up a little bit more than 3 million this time. You look at it, like I said, they're not tight ends are not getting paid right now. They're just not. I mean, Jordan Reed at 3.5 million, Gresham makes more at 3.5 million. Greg Olson's only at 5.1 million. Jason Witten's almost at 6 million. You know, he's going to – Delanie Walker's at $6.2 million. So he probably fits right into that $5 to $6 million range. I mean, he's better than Lance Kendricks and Mercedes Lewis, and those guys are $4 million and $4.5 million. He's not better than Olsen, but Olsen's on a super friendly deal. and he's probably not better than Delanie Walker, and that's probably at the top end you would go at $6.2 million a year. So yeah, probably between the Olsen to Delanie Walker, which is 5.1 to 6.2. I mean, we're only talking a million and a, you know, 1.1 million at that point. But again, when the Cardinals have to figure out, you know, Chandler Jones for 5 years, $75 million, and they have to figure out if they're going to re-sign the guy we'll talk about next, it all, that $1 million could be the difference in, you know, having DJ Swearinger back along with Calais Campbell and just getting DJ Swearinger back.
The offensive line, Taylor Boggs.
Yeah. I mean, at some point you have to start letting your draft picks be backups, right?
Right. Yeah, well, and he's the guy who since 2011 can't get through a season.
And you know what? When he played, he did exactly what you expect. He's not good, but he's not a complete liability, right?
But a credit to him, he was one of the very first one of the first players that was signed up to that offensive line strength camp, that strength program, the training program, and he got himself vested. So he's probably done in the NFL, I would bet, but he's vested and he's got his pension. So good for him. Evan Mathis, he's retiring. AQ Shipley. Why wouldn't you?
I legit think you have to at this point, because I don't think
he's going to cost much. I think he'll probably two years, $3 million, because he was on
$7.85 million.
Yeah, he was on a backup contract.
So, do you pay him like a starter, or do you say go see if you can find starter money? We will have a 2 year, $2 million contract sitting here for you.
Perhaps.
I mean, perhaps. I think that's what they have to do with him. Like, that's just my opinion. But like you said, like, you can't overpay him. So like, if a team offers him $3 million a year, like, okay, good luck. Like, you know, we drafted Evan Bain. We pick, you know, we have a high enough draft pick that we can pick somebody in the second round if we're not sold on Bain. Like, but I don't think you can invest more than like you said, like a million and a half in that guy.
So I think he's worth, because he's going to be, well, I think maybe you offer up some incentives on the front end.
Oh, definitely.
For starting, but 2 years, $3 million, I think is solid. It shows him respect. Yes, you are a starter in this league, but at the same time, we've got this other guy.
Exactly.
And then you can at the $1.5 million as a backup, and you're okay.
And you're okay, because he's basically a three-way backup, right? Like, he may not be your backup left guard or right guard, but he's your backup center, and then Bain is technically like one of your backup guards. So, you know, it just, you have to be creative, but I think you're right.
Earl Watford, aside from being, there's no room for him on the roster now. John Wetzel has taken over and for a lot cheaper. Yeah. He's cheaper, and truthfully, he's better than what Watford was. Now, Watford, who got off-season, he got, you know, OTA, mini camp, and training camp awards from Bruce Arians every year. But when it came down to it, when he had a chance to make an impact, he didn't live up to what. Now, there's definitely value in the league for him. I don't think he'll ever see starter money. He might. I mean, at best, what I think we're going to see is Ted Larson, and I think even Ted Larson is a step above him.
3 years, like $6 million from somebody you're thinking that's going to take a chance that he could start.
Because he's still young and athletic.
Yeah, so you take a chance that he can start somewhere, and he, you know, you get him on a steal of a price tag. Because even if you sign him for 3 years, he's going to be like 28, right? 29 when he's done. So then he's going to be able to go sign one more contract. So yeah, I'm with you. So did you know that Taylor Boggs has made more money in his career than Darren Fells? I would not have guessed that.
Well, because he's been in the league on and off with it since 2011.
2011.
I was reading a story about him. Was like, wow, what really? Yeah, he's And yes, it's fantastic for him. Coming back, we'll break this up in one final segment. We'll come back and talk about the defensive side of the ball and the free agents on that side, which have some of the most intriguing names. We'll be back on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on Rise Up Sea Red, and the defensive side of the ball has the probably the most interesting defensive line that you've got, the defensive free agents. Calais Campbell is the first one on that list.
I mean, if what the guy from Over the Cap said is true, I think you have to at $8 million a year. Like, what replacement are you going to get? Because Calais was what? A top four defensive lineman this year? Top five?
You'd think so, yes. The top five. So, definitely top 10.
So,
and
I mean,
I don't think you're going to get him at $8 million. I really don't. I don't think you're going to get him at $8 million.
But see, that's the thing. If he signs for $8 million somewhere else, you know how bad that's going to look for the Cardinals. Even if they offered him $8 million and then he went somewhere else to get $8 million, like the Carlos Dansby thing, where you know they offered him allegedly what $14 million and then he went and got 15.5 somewhere else. Like, you know how bad that's going to look. Like, now if he gets paid. If he gets paid over $10 million a year, I don't think you can blame the Cardinals. But anything under $10 million, I think the Cardinals have to match, because he is – I mean, he's your second all-time sack leader in franchise history. So that means something to the franchise. And he is the heart and soul of their defense still. Yeah. I mean, because Tyrann Mathieu's not on the field enough to have taken the mantle from him completely. So I just, unless it's an absurd number from somebody, I mean, like if Seattle was to come in and be like, oh, you know, we're going to stick it to the Cardinals. we're going to offer Calais, because they have, I think they have like $42 million in cap space. You know, we're going to offer Calais $12 million a year. Like, okay, good luck in Seattle, man. Like, what are you going to do? Right. But I mean, if the Denver Broncos or, you know, us like the LA Rams now with Wade Phillips, like come in and offer him 3 years and $27 million, you have to match that. Like, you can't let him go to LA because you couldn't squeeze another million a year.
Well, and here's my thing about Campbell. I think he's going to be pricey, because you look at the – I wrote about this right after the Michael Bennett contract. 3 years, $31.5 million. Now, granted, some of that's fake money. But if you look at that number, you almost have to look at that as a baseline. Because statistically, Campbell's a year younger and exceeds almost every category that Bennett does. Now, Bennett's a little more versatile, but I think you're going to have to. I mean, I don't think they're going to get him back it unless he
takes the discount.
Stays on the unless he takes a discount, it's going to cost $10 million a year. He made nine and a half this year. It's going to cost at least 10 for maybe a 3 year deal.
But yeah, that's the thing, though. I mean, I think, and I'm with you, and you and I have talked about this before. Like, I will never, ever bad talk a player that went and got paid ever, because they don't have guaranteed money. And so it's, you know, like you said, a lot of it's fake money, but I mean, the Cardinals have legitimately paid him $58 million over the course of his career, over nine seasons. Now, that's not a ton of money in terms of, you know, quarterbacks and what they paid Larry Fitzgerald. And, you know, we're talking, they gave, you know, and Patrick Peterson got $50 million guaranteed or whatever, you know, all of that. Like, I get that. But the Cardinals have paid him $58 million. So doesn't he have to say, like, oh, okay, they've really been more than fair to me. Like, I can do, you know, 3 years, like you said, 3 years, $25 million, big guarantee, like a 12.5 million, $15 million guaranteed of that. And basically, like, play the last year like the Cardinals are with Carson Palmer still. Like, that 2019 or 18 season isn't real and doesn't have anything to it. I don't know. Like, you would hope that would be plausible, but also in the same vein, like, if, like I said, like if a team comes and offers him 3 years and, like you said, $33 million, you're not going to necessarily begrudge him for taking that, right?
No, no, not at all, especially if depending on where he lands. Now, on the other side of that is we look back to the Super Bowl season. Now this comparison pales, but Antonio Smith, who was a very, very integral part of that defensive line, a very talented player, went on to have many, many more years of high quality, high performance in the NFL. They just let him walk because they had Calais Campbell. This potentially, although it seems absurd to think that the Cardinals could make a run without him on that defense. But when you have a Rodney Gunter, Robert Kimdichie, and to a lesser extent, an Xavier Williams, who they're really high on, maybe they say, you know, for the amount that we can pay these three guys or the amount that we can save and pay someone else in a different area, maybe we don't need that much production there, but can do just as well elsewhere.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. But obviously, this is just fake numbers. But if you go to Spot Track or whatever it's called, the database, you go in there and they have his number as 3 years and just over $25 million, so $8.5 million a year. You would hope that that could get it done, but like Jess just said, maybe it's not enough money. So you know, you just kind of wait and see.
Then on the defensive line, you also have Frosty Rucker, a guy who wants to come back, and you know, he's a great glue guy in the locker room. The question is, he really doesn't offer much. I mean, he's not giving you really any more performance over replacement point in his career. And if you have a Corey Peters in the locker room, and if you have Calais Campbell re-signed, his value is diminished, especially if he's taking a roster spot and potentially going to play, then you are taking snaps away from young, more dynamic players like Gunter and Kimdichie.
You know, I'm to the point where they have to start playing some of these young guys. Like,
right.
This isn't Seattle. And I know this is going to make Cardinals fans mad, but this isn't Seattle. Like, they really haven't accomplished anything yet. Like, they've been good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, statistically, they've been great. But they haven't won anything. I mean, they won one NFC West title. They have one playoff win. They don't have any they haven't won a championship game. They haven't been to the Super Bowl. So at some point, these replaceable parts, these parts that are moving, have to be replaced with newer parts that hopefully can be the what they need to push them over that hump. And so that's where I'm at kind of with a lot of these like veterans. Like, unless you're Calais Campbell, good level good, why shouldn't you be replaced? And you know, Frosty's contract is probably going to be, I mean, wouldn't he want $2-3 million again?
I think at this point $1 million would get him here. And he's a guy I would probably want to see come back only if Calais Campbell doesn't come back. Because then you're left, if you lose Rucker and Campbell, you're left with only Corey Peters as the only veteran voice in the room that's been there for a little while. And he is a quiet leader. Not that I would prefer to have one or the other. Obviously, Calais. I want Calais. But if they can't, for some reason, get Calais, Frosty on a 1 year, maybe a veteran minimum, like they grabbed a couple guys before when they had, what's the name of that safety that they had a couple years ago? But they bring them out to the, you're a mobile. 1 year, $800,000, $850,000, whatever the vet minimum is for someone of that caliber. I'm okay with that. But yeah, he's probably done.
Yeah, I think. I mean, I think we got to be.
Chandler Jones, obviously he will be back, whether it's franchised or signed long-term. The interesting thing is how much will it cost? On the franchise deal, you get him another year, it'll be under $15 million. You sign him long-term, you're going to be paying him at least an average of $15 million per year. And that's on the cheap side, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's going to be the going rate, right, for pass rushers at this point. I'm trying to look at these contracts. And so, you know, you look at it, and the reality is outside of quarterback, pass rushing, you have Olivier Vernon's at $13 million a year. Robert Quinn's at $12 million a year.
That's funny.
How much you got Justin Houston at $13 million a year?
It's going to take, it's probably going to take $575 million or probably.
I would imagine. Von Miller's contract was, they did this right. So his first year was only $11.5 million. So it goes up to $20 million next year. So, and that's his cap hit. His base salary is 17. This year, like Jess has said before, it's fake money. This year, his base salary was $2 million, but they paid him
a gobs up front. So
yeah, they gave him another $9.5 million in roster bonus bull crap. but his base salary is $17 million, then $19 million, then $17 million, $17.5 million. Bruce Irvin, who's technically not a pass rusher, he signed for cheaper at $437 million. So it's just gonna depend on what you are thinking about paying this guy and what do you think you can get him for? I think it's going to be, like you said, it's going to be right around that 5 years, $75 million. When you look at Olivier Vernon getting $585 million.
That's absurd. I don't even get it.
Guaranteed. I think the only thing you can say about that is he is younger, right? He's 26, and isn't Jones 27? So at the end of his So he signed his deal when he was 25, and he'll be 29 in the last year of his deal. So Jones, maybe you can knock off 10 million. I really don't think you can, but maybe you can knock off. That's the thing. Can the Cardinals, whether or not we think Chandler Jones is worth it, can the Cardinals really not pay Chandler Jones as much as Olivier Vernon got paid?
Well, the other option is
by the way, his market value is 15.6 a year.
So That makes sense. Or the other option is this: you franchise him, and perhaps you get a top end edge rusher with their 13th pick. There's a couple guys on that list that you could get who have potential, the top end rusher. And maybe you roll with that guy plus Marcus Golden. That's the other option. You've got him for that last year. You got him for this year. You'd obviously like more, but if you're looking long-term,
That's the thing. I think you can only pay one of Jones and Golden. So if you, like you said, if you want to put yourself in a position where you don't have to pay Jones, then you franchise him, you get him for that $15 million for 1 year, and then you kind of paint yourself in the corner where you draft Tim Williams or Tackris McKinley, Derek Barnett, one of those young pass rushers. That's what you have to do at that point. So, because you can't franchise Jones and then lose him in 2018 and then have just Marcus Golden, right? Like you have to have somebody waiting in the wings, so to speak.
True. Kevin Minter, that's kind of a, well, you know what you have there. You can probably do better, but do you risk losing him? He's able. Of course, we're going to do this. Seal Moore right next to him. Seal Moore proved to be solid at the end of the year. Is he a guy you want calling the plays on the defense? Probably not. You would think that the Cards want him back, but he's going to have to go under market to be back, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what are you going to get Minter for? I've said 2 years, like maybe $9 million. I don't know. That sounds like a lot still.
But I mean, statistically, you look at what he's done. It's probably what
I'm looking
at. His going value is, and
I like this. I like
solid.
Yeah, comparable thing that they offer, because then I can see what his true.
Because the other option is you let Kevin Minter walk. You still got Dan Buchanan. You bring back Seal Moore for cheap. He can perhaps be your Mike, but then and most certainly they're probably drafting a linebacker to pair up with Buchanan this year. That's almost surely happened, or maybe they get someone else in free agency.
Yeah, but that's just one of those things. Like, I don't know where you go with that position, because it's not a position like the highest paid guys are definitely like super highly paid, but those going down the list here, Darryl Washington's a top 10 paid inside linebacker, $4.4 million. But Bobby Wagner,
stop it.
Bobby Wagner. Okay. So Bobby Wagner got a 4-year, $43 million contract. That's a lot of money, you know? So, but he got $3 million and $4 million, you know, again, fake money, but so his cap hits were $6 and $7 million in his first 2 years. Minter's not even like in the same atmosphere, right?
No. No.
So Maluga, that's probably where he's at, right? Ray Maluga.
Yeah.
Maluga got $315 million. So I think you're right around the $4 to $5 million a year. So if you want him for 3 to 4 years or 2 to 3 years, you probably have to go 210 or 315. I mean, and to me, I don't know if I do that. Like, that's a lot of money.
It is.
For a guy that's, you know, a two down backer.
When you could go with a Seal Moore for a little bit
and try to find a replacement.
And you draft a replacement who's more athletic and does more. Alex Okafor, I think I bring Seal Moore back. It doesn't hurt to bring him back because you can get him back on a minimum deal for sure. Because while there's definitely talent there, but when he just got kicked to the curb, by the Colts and really did nothing the rest of the year, no one is going to be banging down his door to sign him. No one is.
No, not at all.
Alex Okafor, you can let him walk if you want. You know, they went with their three pass rusher guy. Kareem Martin can be that guy or whoever. Or if they draft an edge guy, guess what?
He's that guy.
And the defensive backfield, you've got Marcus Cooper. I think he does need to be a priority for them to bring back on the. He's not. He shouldn't. You know, maybe he might actually cost more than we might think. Pro Bowl alternate and everything. But even if they don't, you've got leverage there because you've got Brandon Williams, whom they feel is going to be good. And say what we say about, you know, what Justin Bethel went through. A healthy Justin Bethel can, I think, be Marcus Cooper effective.
And I'm just kind of looking. What's he going to cost? You get down here on these low-end guys. See, I think you can bring in, like, a veteran. I heard that Jonathan Joseph may be gone.
He would be nice.
From the Texans, and he's like 32. So, I heard they're going to cut him. They might cut him. Not that they were going to, but they may cut him. You have some veterans that you might be able to get instead. That would be my only thing. Like, I think you can do better in that instance. But if you get it for cheap enough, I don't have a problem with it.
Mike Jenkins, he's been hurt forever. Don't try that. Don't go to that well again.
I mean, if you want to bring him back in the same way you had him this year, where you don't have to pay him, right? Like, don't pay him. But I mean,
but he tears his ACL again, and guess what? You got to pay him.
Yeah.
Then we get down to the safeties. Tony Jefferson, DJ Swearinger. John Gambadoro on Arizona Sports Today said that he was hearing that kind of the number that the Cardinals are comfortable with is $6.5 million.
Gambo,
and he's probably
track.
Is that probably where he got that? Is that what Jefferson's value is there?
6.2, yeah.
And he heard from a couple of guys that he's probably going to price themselves out. He's probably going to price out.
I just don't know where he's going to go. Because, I mean, Georgia Loca is better or as good and got 530. Morgan Burnett got 4 and just under 25. Like, Rashad Jones, is got 428. Like, where does he think? And he's good. Don't get me wrong. Like, yeah. I'm not saying he's not good, but like, how much higher does he think? Like, $7 million is the absolute top of that list. Morgan Burnett's an all pro type guy, and he's 425. Like, does he think he's going to get? And I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but does he think he's going to get more than that?
I don't know. Like, but it comes down to this. It might come down to this. Tony Jefferson or DJ Swearinger, who we both think might be a better fit in terms of the roster because he can play both positions kind of well. Jefferson is great around the line of scrimmage, great in run support. I think you would agree that Swearinger is an upgrade in coverage. Would you not? Maybe you're going to see a couple more mental mistakes out there, but he's more dynamic in coverage than Jefferson, I would want to say myself.
Yeah, and I'm with you there. Like, I think Swearinger gives you more at a cheaper rate.
More for less.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, again, when you're talking about can you re-sign Calais Campbell, that's what becomes important, right?
Yeah, and here's the thing, and this, I hope we don't run into this for Jefferson's sake. I think there is a reputation around the NFL as we look past, if we look over the last few years. I believe that teams around the NFL view the safety production that we get from the Cardinals as scheme driven.
Absolutely.
And so, do you need to pay Jefferson $6.5 million if you can get DJ Swearinger for $3.5 million? Now, I don't know that DJ's only going to get $3.5 million, but you'd think, is he going to command more than $3.5 million next year?
I mean,
could you get him on a 2-year $7 million?
Exactly. Or can you get him on a 3-year $15 million? I mean, maybe you get him for 5 a year, but you get him, and you do the same type of thing where it's, 8-9 million guaranteed, kind of backload that. And then if it doesn't work out, you kind of, like you said, you do 2 years, basically 8 million guaranteed. And then you wipe your hands at the situation in this last year if it doesn't work out.
And so you've got that question. So I would like to see, I think the Cardinals need to bring one of the two back, because while at safety they have players there, Tyvon Branch and Tyrann Mathieu, it's not like unless in the first round you end up going with like Jamal Adams or Malik Hooker, those top safeties who you could plug in day one, you're going to need a Swearinger or need a Jefferson there, because one, Matthew doesn't play safety most of the time. And two, do you want to count on Tyvon Branch after the year that he had this year?
No, but you know, that's the only no of the whole thing. So, I mean, I like it. You know, I think your keys guys, you know, that we've talked about before are the, you're looking at, you know, the Cardinals, Calais Campbell, obviously Chandler Jones. I mean, that's the top. And then from there, everybody else kind of falls in line. You'd like to have Jermaine Gresham back. You'd like to have DJ Swearinger or Tony Jefferson back, one of them. You'd like to have Kevin Minter back. Obviously, we talked about Chris Johnson. You know, and you bring back Chandler Catanzaro. And then everybody else is, you know, you'd like to have them, but it has to be cost-effective.
Right.
But I think outside of Chandler Jones and Calais Campbell, I mean, are we in agreement that maybe Jermaine Gresham's the next guy on that list?
Probably. Or maybe it's or maybe go more surprising. Is it AQ Shipley?
Yeah, I mean, you might be right. Maybe it is AQ. But again, you find yourself with AQ Shipley in a top five of anything for the Arizona Cardinals.
and you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, but I think that's where we're at. So.
Well, that'll bring us to the close of this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We talked some playoffs, and we talked about the free agents that the Cardinals have. We'll be back again next week. We'll definitely have show scheduled for the next 3 weeks. And then after that, we might take a little break, but we'll wait and see till then. We'll be talking, no doubt, we'll be talking about some, I think next week we'll probably talk salary cap casualties. We'll definitely have a Super Bowl matchup to talk about. But until then, you know where to find us if you don't. CardsWire, you'll find us on the sites that we both write for, CardsWire.com and RevengeOfTheBirds.com. The podcast itself is hosted on Blog Talk Radio. You can also find us on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher Radio, and on anywhere you can find podcasts. We're on Twitter, Rise Up Sea Red, and also on Facebook, Rise Up Sea Red. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root, and that wraps it up. Go Cardinals!